Thank you, David, for that welcome, and may I also thank CEDA for their partnership. It's been a real partnership between CEDA and Mercer, and in fact between the three Davids, David Byers, the CEO, David Walker and myself, and I think four of us have been speaking on media this morning, including Greg Meek, the Deputy CEO. So it's out there, radio, television, print. Let's have a look at what it's all about. The title of the paper, the CEDA paper, is Pensions for Longer Life. The subtitle, if you like, is The Age of Retirement, to be 65 or not to be, just to give it a slightly different twist. What we're going to do in the next 20 minutes is look at some background, look at trends in pension ages around the world, what should we do in Australia, and we're starting with the pension age, but then we're going to say, well, how does super fit in? Because super is very much part of retirement income and part of retirement. So where does super fit in? And I'll make some suggestions as to how we should adjust the super system for the longer term. Inevitably, as an actuary, and thank you for that comment, David, but I've got to go back to some numbers. But before we look at numbers and graphs, let's acknowledge we have an ageing population. That's very well known, and I don't need to give you all the numbers and data. But part of the effects are that we will have a growing proportion of the population who are retired, however we define that. When the age pension started in Australia in 1909, excuse me, it's all that media work. When we started in 1909 with the age pension, which followed a few states with an age pension, 4% of the population was over age 65. It's now about 15%, growing to 25%. We know all that. A corresponding reduction in the relative importance or size of the younger population, the taxpayers, if you like. That leads to a reduction in the labour force, and certainly in the growth of the labour force, if we don't do anything. That leads to slower economic growth. With an ageing population, we'll also see changes in consumption patterns, because older people buy different things. And of course, we see changes in government expenditure, increasing health costs particularly, increasing costs on aged care, some increase in pension costs. Will there be a corresponding reduction in education costs? I suggest that's unlikely, because it's very difficult to reduce education costs. So we're going to see a bit of a blowout in the budget if we don't do a few things. I should add, that's not the primary goal of this paper. As you'll see, there's a reduction in the government expenditure, but it's relatively minor. What's more important in what we're recommending is changing the mindset, changing the norm within Australian community and changing what people expect. Well, I promised you a couple of graphs. Here's the first one. Based on Australian life tables, our increasing life expectancy at birth from late 19th century, that's more than 100 years ago, to the latest life tables of 2002. You'll see the line is pretty steady. It's got a few blips in it, but it doesn't change much. The pink-purple line is females. The blue line is males. That's at birth. We need to recognise much of the improvement in life expectancy at birth in the first half of the 20th century was improvements or declines in mortality at younger ages, infant mortality and younger ages. We didn't see a lot of improvement at older ages. That has all changed from about the 1960s or 70s. What this graph shows is the life expectancy at age 65 for men and women. And the male line, the blue line or the dark line, virtually steady, give or take a bit, up to about 1970, and then it takes off. The more pink-purple line, females, starts to rise a little bit, but again it takes off in the 1970s and thereafter. And yet what have we done? We've kept the pension age for men at 65 since 1909. The female pension age was 65 in 1909. In 1910, they made it 60. I wasn't around then to tell you exactly why, but probably it was related to the fact that most wives are younger than their husbands, and therefore people could retire together, and of course you didn't have superannuation as established as it is today. Currently, the pension age for females is on the increase, which I'll come back to in a moment. But life expectancy at 65 is clearly increasing, and we would expect it to continue to do so in the years ahead. Does it make sense to leave the pension age at 65? Just a very brief global review. Traditionally, most OECD countries have a standard pension age for 65. Many have had a differential age for men and women, with the women age being lower, much the same as Australia. And there is a trend to equalise those ages between men and women, which is what we're doing in Australia. Is that enough? Let's have a look at what's happening around the world. The US has announced an increase in their social security age from 65 to 66 in 2009 and then to 67 in 2027. The UK is increasing their state pension age from 65 in 2024 to 68 in 2046. Germany from 65 to 67 by 2029. Denmark increasing their age from 65 to 67 and then linking it to changes in life expectancy at age 60. So it's not fixed. Just tuck that one away. Japan, increasing access to their earnings-related component from 60 to 65. So a number of the countries that we naturally compare ourselves with have already made announcements to increase their social security or pension age. In fact, the OECD has said in a fairly recent paper, increasing the pension eligibility ages will improve the financial sustainability of the whole system and retirement incentives. It just makes sense as we live longer. The whole thing becomes more sustainable, and there are then different incentives about work and retirement. What are we already doing in Australia? The pension age for females was 60, as I said, from 1910 until the mid-1990s, when the government announced, the Labor government as it then was, announced with very little forewarning, because it started virtually the year after, oh, we're going to start to increment the female pension age from 60 through to 65 very gradually. We've already got to 63. If you can see the little green blip, that's where we are today, and it's on the way to 65. So that's where we are today. Men, still at 65, as we've been since 1909. Women at 63, but heading to 65. That change in the pension age has not caused great street demonstrations, has not caused angst amongst the pensioner community. It's been accepted. Part of the reason, of course, it's been accepted is it's very hard now to argue for discrimination. So the two are heading to the same point at 65. The real question is, what should we do when females reach 65? Is it appropriate to do something a little bit different? And what I'm recommending is a two-step process. The first step is to continue what we've been doing with females, starting at about 2015. Once they reach 65, let's keep that step process going in exactly the same way as we've done with females, but bring the men in with them, so there's no discrimination, and let's reach 67. That would cut in at about 2022. So that increase from 65 to 67 would be in the period 2015 to 2022. So unlike some of the press you might read that we're suddenly recommending no pensions for people who are now 66, that's not what we're saying. We're saying let's gradually do it from 2015 through to 2022. We've already got the system in place for women. Let's apply it to men. Step two, do we leave it at 67? No, I don't think we do. In all likelihood, we're going to live longer and longer with medical advances. So what I'm suggesting is we continue to adjust the pension age with half the change of life expectancy from 65 or 67. The actual process we can debate or put in greater detail, But basically, on recent expectations, it would suggest that after we reach 67 in 2022, maybe 8 years after that, it goes to 67.5. And then it goes to 68. Okay? So we're linking it to the Australian life expectancy with enough forewarning. The increase to 67 would not, or as I said, would come into place in 2022, and that would affect anyone under the age of 52. So if you're over 52, no problems, okay? You might be 66, but you won't get to 67. If you're under 52, it might have some impact on you. But you're a healthier 52-year-old than you were a few years ago for a relative 52-year-old, if that makes sense. The little blips I've got there to 67.5 and 68 are mere examples of what it could be. Clearly, I don't know what the life expectancy might be in a few years' time. But the important part is the principle. Let's not get stuck with an age 65 anymore or age 67. Let's continue to move it. And I've suggested half the increase in life expectancy, thereby sharing that growth in life expectancy between the retirement years and the working years. Okay, so it's a shared benefit, if you like. Some of the benefits and effects of the high pension age. Firstly, age 65 is no longer the age. It's been there since 1909. It's stuck in our culture, and it's time we got rid of it. Peter Costello, a couple of years ago, said, the retirement age is 65, we're not going to move it. Well, sorry, Mr. Treasurer, most people retire well and truly before 65. It's not the retirement age. It may be the pension age. But let's get rid of the age and make it much more dynamic. And with superannuation, with transition to retirement and other policies, the whole concept needs to be more flexible. Such a change would encourage later retirement and improve the sustainability, I suggest, of our retirement income system, both the super side and the pension side. One of the questions we're always asked is, well, how much is it going to save? We've estimated in the paper it will save about $800 million a year. That is the saving in the pensions, offset, I should add, by an estimate of the increase in the disability pensions. There will be some people who are 66 who can't work and therefore should receive a disability support pension. That is part of the infrastructure. But that already happens to 62 and 63-year-olds. They get a disability support pension. So there's no suggestion in changing the whole approach. So that's the suggestion in respect of the pension. An important part of our retirement income system is not just the age pension, but superannuation as well. What should we do about superannuation? I'm not going to change it too dramatically, but I am suggesting a few things. When we come to ages in superannuation, there are lots of them. As most of you would be aware, the preservation age, that is when you can access your super, is currently 55, and it's been indicated that it will grow to 60 by 2024. Benefits as of July this year are tax-free after age 60 if paid from a taxed super fund. Contributions are permitted up to age 65. Oh, but compulsory ESG contributions, if you're employed as an employee, are paid up to age 70. Oh, sorry, as long as you're under age 70. Spouse contributions are permitted if the spouse is under age 70, subject to work test after 65. Co-contributions only paid if the employee is age 70 or less at the end of the financial year, not when they might receive them. But under Better Super, contributions can be made up to age 75, subject to a work test. Hang on. I don't understand all this. There are too many ages. What's the policy here? When does the government really encourage us to stop working? Is it when the SG stops at 70? Is it under Better Super at 75? Is it when the benefits are tax-free at 60? I don't know. It's a mishmash, and there is no clear direction in this whole system. So we've got three suggested recommendations that affect super. The first one is to permit contributions, including the SG, employees and the self-employed, to be able to make contributions, subject to a work test, as long as they're no more than 10 years above the pension age. So that would be today, 65, let's make it 65, up to 75. So the SG would be paid up to 75, not just 70. Let's just make one age 10 years above the pension age, not a whole mishmash of stuff. People might say, well, hang on, people are going to abuse that system. They're going to keep working and keep putting in lots of money into super. Well, the contribution limits in super introduced as part of Better Super will limit that potential for abuse. And by then it'll only be $50,000 a year you can put in from taxable contributions indexed for everybody. So the first thing is put your money in up to 10 years above the pension age as contributions. We're going to live longer. Let's make it one age. Secondly, we have a tax-free age of super benefits from age 60 now. Let's gradually move that towards, but not necessarily reach, the pension age. If we're going to encourage people to work a little bit longer, why do we say they can access their tax-free super at 60? I know that makes sense because that's where the preservation age is going. But let's gradually move that up a little bit if we're going to move the pension age up as well. So move it up to 62, 63. The third component, though, is to retain the preservation age at 60, where it's heading. I'm not suggesting an increase in that age at all. Why not? Because there are workers who are worn out by the age of 60. Blue-collar workers, agricultural workers, etc. If the pension age moves up to 67, as suggested, or even at 65, they will need to be able to access their super at 60. So let's leave that at 60. And even if you move the tax-free age up, are we saying to them, hang on, they get no tax-free super? Oh, no. Even under today's rules, you can get $140,000 tax-free before you're 60. So that would continue and that would be indexed. So those three components, let's have that 10-year contribution opportunity, 10 years above the pension age. Let's move the tax-free age up a little bit. Don't leave it at 60, but leave the preservation age at 60. How would this look if we put it all together? The blue-pink line is the pension age. Moving from 65 gradually up to 67 and maybe 68. The green line, the tax-free age, I've got in there moving up to the pension age, a bit flexible on that. It perhaps should be a couple of years below that to enable transition to retirement. Access to super, moving from 55 to 60, but staying at 60. And then contributions are permitted 10 years above the pension age. So you've always got that 10-year component. So to conclude, what's the paper saying? Firstly, let's review the pension age. It's been 65 for 100 years. Let's change the paradigm. Let's increase it gradually, not immediately. Let's permit people to plan for it. Let's ensure that the super ages provide a clearer picture of what government policy is. And what will that whole system be? It will be a more dynamic system. If, for instance, we get major medical advances and we all live to 110, I'm not sure I want to, but let's assume that happens, then the pension age will naturally move up with it, and so will the superannuation ages. We have a very clear message and incentive to say, work a little bit longer. And that's one of the things the government is encouraging, and I would endorse that strongly. So let's send the right signals out. That is, if we want people to work longer, then some of the other things are changing naturally. The retirement income system, I suggest, will be more sustainable, whether that's in the pension cost area or in the super area. Both will be more sustainable longer term. And as people stay in the workforce a little bit longer, they're more likely to have more adequate retirement incomes because they're contributing for a few more years. The investment income on their previous super is there for a few more years. Compound interest is very powerful at those later years. And, of course, if they retire 2 or 3 years later, their life expectancy is a little bit shorter, which means their income is a little bit higher. but importantly, there will still be protection for those who are unable to work with the disability support pension framework and access to super from age 60. Finally, we're suggesting that we announce it now or very shortly so that people have got time to plan. We don't suddenly want to introduce it with a year's notice. People have the right to plan for their retirement, and we think by announcing it now or shortly and then planning it, really a continuation of the pension age increments for females, for men as well, between 2015 and 2022, people can make their appropriate plans. So that's what's in the paper in a snapshot. I really want to thank CEDA for their support in lots of ways, and I look forward to a discussion.